Hey everyone, welcome to Seeking What They Saw. We are just two today in this episode as Anthony and I talk about the topic of intellectual arrogance. That means that after you listen to this episode, you will never have to listen to any other podcast episode ever again. You will fully have the truth. So let's get to the party. Anthony, it's just the two of us today.
Hello, Jesse.
Just you and me, without Sean or Eric.
Just the men of a darker shade.
Doesn't it feel like, I don't know, this is just between you and me, nobody else, okay? Mm-hmm. It just feels more free without Sean or Eric.
It feels a little bit better. There's a sense of freedom in the air. I can smell the daisies blooming.
It's like springtime. That's what it feels like.
I agree.
And we're in the dead of winter, and yet it feels like springtime without them.
100%.
This is good. Well, so the reason that we are in the situation we're in is because both Eric and Sean have children. I have not announced this publicly on the podcast, but my wife is due in about four months.
Your time is coming soon.
So I will be joining that crowd soon. Yeah. But Anthony, you brought up this topic we're going to talk about today. And I was like, let's do it. Let's record. And I honestly was joking. But then Sean was like, no, you guys should do it. I can't because I have kids and a job. And then I was like, we should just do it out of spite. Just because, like, we should just do it.
Just because we can.
And right now I'm totally manipulating the narrative because I have the power to do that. So, but anyways, you have a thing to talk about.
Indeed. I do have a thing. Should I start talking about it?
No, we should continue talking about nonsense.
I feel like banter is an important part of the intimate relationship we have, Jesse. I did want to ask, how are you?
Oh man. Does anybody care about this? Like,
I feel like they do.
I could be doing like this is the funny part. I could be doing so well. Everybody be like, cool. Okay, so what's the topic though?
True. That's true.
So, no, I'm doing just fine. Just fine.
That's good.
I, you know, got an itch somewhere on my back that I just sometimes struggle with, but
that's always the hardest.
Actually, no, that was just nonsense. I was trying to fill time. Actually, I do have a genuine struggle. I have dry skin generally, and which feels like TMI for some reason. Dry skin generally, and there is a spot on my back that is the hardest place to get with lotion. Do you have that same struggle?
Oh yeah, that's real. That's a real thing.
Because we both have ashy skin, and when you're brown with ashy skin, it just shows.
Yeah.
So you have to do something about it.
100%.
Now, I'm not showing off my back to anybody, but I just want some nice creamy skin. But do you have that problem?
I do.
It's like right in the middle of the back.
Yeah, for sure. Although my arms are very long, like I have absurdly long, lanky arms, so I can usually get to the back spots, but you know.
Well, that's okay. I guess it's just me. Well, if anyone else shares in this, just let us know. Just let us email, Facebook,
send us
Instagram,
an email and let us,
just let
know,
us know
that, you,
that
also...
you also struggle with hard to get back spots for your lotion.
Perfect. That's the kind of banter I was hoping for before I began. Okay.
So let's talk about this topic you brought up.
I don't know why, but I don't know why, but somehow the tone that you used that in right at the end made me feel like I was part of a commercial of some kind. Like, just call in.
I'm not known for that.
Call in the next hour and we'll give you two. We'll give you two back scratchers.
Well, I wish this was a radio show, but it's not. But you watched a video recently
that
was kind of interesting to you?
Yeah, I did. Some friends and I, we were watching this sort of debate video between an Adventist pastor and an ex-Adventist. And the issue they were debating was the investigative judgment, which, you know, is one of the kind of a core Adventist doctrine and belief.
And it's a distinctive.
It's a distinctive.
We're the only ones. As far as I know, we're the only denomination in Christianity that holds this doctrine.
Right. And I didn't want to get into the weeds of discussing that doctrine specifically, but more sort of what I was observing kind of happening during the debate and the conversation. And it's all centered around this phrase that I'm calling intellectual arrogance. Intellectual arrogance.
Interesting. Explain what you mean.
Yeah. So I'll start with the interview because this is kind of what sparked it, was sort of kind of watching this back and forth between this Adventist pastor and this ex-Adventist, and sort of noticing the Adventist pastor, just his posture towards the person, you know, on the other side of the table was
his physical posture. He was hunched over and it bothered you.
Yes. No, his tone, his, you know, conversational posture was one that sort of to me communicated, you know, I have all the answers. I have all the answers. And if you could only just know the truth that I know, then you would see that I'm right. And I was just sort of kind of watching that and contemplating that, you know, there was no, throughout the whole interview, which is what we did watch it again recently. It's like over two
hours and like 40 minutes.
Yeah. It's super long, like over 2.5 hours over the course of most of the interview. There's never one time where the Adventist pastor says, oh, hey, you know, that's a really interesting point. Or, yeah, wow, that's really something thought provoking or something that you brought up that I had never seen it that way before. There was no sort of humility in that sense or concessions. It was more just like, no. See, this is why you're incorrect. And this is why you're seeing it incorrectly. And here is the right way to see it.
Yeah, there's one part where he's like, you made, in essence, an error of thought that I expected you to make.
Exactly.
Like, oh, okay.
I planned for this sort of thought error and I have a perfect defense. And in some senses, like a debate format sort of, that's what that's for, you know? So, you know, and I think my personality
debate has long been held as the best way to get somebody to change their mind. And so do you both prepare all of your talking points? And then at the end, someone obviously wins, and then the person who lost just adopts the winning viewpoint.
Exactly. That's one how person, that works. They give up their whole worldview, and they switch to the other one.
Oh, just man. Gives up their entire worldview.
Oh, man. No, yeah, and I feel like, you know, in all seriousness, like, I do think there's a place for debate. I think there's a place for those types of discussions. I think that's why, you know, like the YouTube channel, Common Ground, you know, or, like Jubilee does those videos, if you guys have seen those, where they'll do like, you know,
atheist and a Christian, where do we have any common ground?
Yeah. Do we have any common ground or like policemen and African Americans or whatever? So I think there's space for that format. But the thing I was kind of taking away was like, wow, it seems like for me, it seems that this interview is representative of what I have kind of felt in the Adventist church a lot growing up in our culture, which is sort of this posture of like, we have answers that are valuable to give to others. And I think when it's taken to the extreme and unhealthy, and I think I've seen it, unfortunately, a lot of times in this way where the posture towards those who don't believe like us is sort of like, I have the truth, you don't. And if you could just know the truth that I have, then like whatever your view is my view is superior to yours, essentially. And this type of intellectual arrogance, I feel like is really, I've just been doing a lot of thinking about kind of the damaging, I think, nature of that. That's what I wanted to bring
up. What do you think is damaging about it? Cause there's the struggle of like intellectual, There's like intellectual superiority or arrogance, which is like, I am above you in my terms of ability to think about things and my viewpoints, my conclusions, they're all, you know, in essence superior to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe have felt people that have acted that way and could, you know, kind of pinpoint some damage that causes, but what do you think is some of the things that really rubbed you the wrong way about it?
Yeah, for sure. I think, and it's funny because I feel like growing up in an Adventist worldview and in an Adventist community, like we did, I almost feel like I didn't quite notice it or know it until I started having friends outside of, the Adventist community. And then I think I almost realized within myself, like, oh, wow, I have this intellectual arrogance where I think that I have a superior view that, about God, the Bible, the world, et cetera, than you do. And, I didn't even know that, I think, until encountering those outside. Of course, I saw, you know, I saw it growing up, whether that be in certain pastors or Bible teachers or people in positions of authority who seem to feel like they had all the answers. But yeah.
Yeah. Like, kind of like, and I know some ways that it comes across in the sense of like, well, the Sunday churches, you know, or yeah. the other Christians or the Catholics or the non-believers or something like that. You start using that language or that tone in your language. And it seems quite clear that what you're about to say is they're wrong. They're less than, you know, whatever it is. It's this almost condescension to other people. But what's kind of interesting about it is what you're talking about is an interesting dilemma, because it feels like there's some level of we need a certainty that our whatever we believe is truth is more true than other things. Mm. In a sense, if you don't have that, why are you even holding the belief to begin with? Mm. But it does seem to take a different level of I don't know the right word, a different level of like intensity within, especially religion in general, I think. Mm-hmm. But because we're talking about Adventism, let's critique our own culture. It does seem to take this level of, because we, for instance, a huge one, worship on Saturday.
Yeah.
That means, and I don't know if you've ever heard people say this, that means we follow the whole Bible.
Yeah, 100%.
You ever heard that?
Yeah.
What's hilarious about that is there are so many things that we don't
follow. We don't follow, yeah. You know?
I mean, what does that mean that we follow the whole Bible? How many Adventists have been speaking in tongues recently?
Yeah.
How many Adventists have been healing people? You know, how many Adventists have been, if we're going to take Old Testament law into account, you know, how many Adventists are not cutting the corners of their hair and stuff? I mean, that's an interesting thing in and of itself, and mm-hmm. it kind of reveals the hypocrisy in what we're saying. Now, of course, if I was, you know, having an intellectual conversation with somebody, I think we could come to some sort of like agreement about what an Adventist would mean when they say we follow the whole Bible. What it really means is that we're following a piece that other people tend to leave out in our opinion.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I can see what that means, but it is quite a haughty statement. And I don't mean like she's a hottie. I mean, like haughty. Is that how to spell? I don't know.
That spelling, like that word, proud. Spelling that word is a journey.
It's one of those things that's like, why is English the way that it is?
Yep.
that's what that word immediately brings out of me. It's a very prideful statement to make. And it is based on the idea that because we are doing something that is theoretically more, oh man, what's the right word? Holy, holistic, following God more in essence, because we're willing to actually follow that command, mm-hmm. the fourth commandment, then therefore we follow the whole Bible. And it really bleeds into, I think, some attitudes I've heard amongst, I got to be honest, man. And yeah. we tend to be hard, you and I especially tend to be hard on the conservative side of Adventism.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest and say, like, I do think that it is, I have found that primarily on the intellectual arrogance. First of all, when I was a kid, found that primarily on the conservative side of Adventism, where it was like, we believe the right theology, therefore. But what's interesting is I've noticed it coming out on the left, on the more liberal side of Adventism. And actually, you probably have more to say on this than I do. But where the more liberal Adventists, in their response to the conservative sides of Adventism, mm-hmm. and the liberal side's perceived idiocy and stupidity that they see in the right, in the conservative side, then there's like almost an intellectual arrogance on the liberal side of, oh, we don't believe that thing, and we do things differently, and we're not as legalistic, and
right.
it's almost its own thing on the other side.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's reflective of just the nature of liberal and conservative, and I feel like we see it in politics too, but yeah, 100%. And I definitely agree and concur with you. And I do, yeah, we definitely tend to be harder on the conservative side of things. But yeah, I think this type of mindset definitely shows itself in both camps in different ways. I think on the conservative side of things, it's in a conserving, you know, it's in like a, we follow the whole Bible, we keep the letter of the law, and that makes us superior. Whereas on the liberal side, I think there's like, we don't do those things, so that makes us superior almost, like, which is interesting.
We don't make those mistakes.
Yeah. Like the amount of times, and this isn't to call out anyone in particular, you know, and many people, what I'm about to say, a lot of the people who said these things are people that I love and consider friends. But a lot of the things I heard when I found out I was coming to Andrews, you know, which is in the Midwest, not on the West Coast, tends to be a little more conservative, Andrews Theological Seminary here. A lot of the, you know, things that I heard in California were like, oh, you're going to get a subpar education. Oh, you know, it's going to be theologically not as rich. It's going to be theologically weaker, or it's like, you know, it's in some senses that an education that maybe I would have gotten out there on the West Coast would be superior because it's not, you know, it's because it's not attached to any sort of conservatism, you know? So there's sort of like a superiority, I think, that comes when you're on the left side of things. And I definitely have felt that too in my life, feeling that I'm superior because I don't view things in a way that maybe someone who's more conservative would.
Turns out they were all right.
The whole time.
No, but you've had a different experience. As soon as you came out to Andrews, you saw that it was different than you expected, and more theologically rich than you expected. Education was in some ways better than you thought.
Yeah. I mean, with this example in particular, I came here with a very arrogant mindset myself, thinking like, oh, I don't really think there's anything that Andrews Seminary could teach me. I feel like I've moved beyond, I feel like, a lot of the basic, more traditional Adventist theological ideas. And then coming here really kind of broke my arrogance and sort of my liberal superiority, essentially. And I've been able to really learn a lot of rich things. So it's been cool.
Well, it's so interesting. So for instance, you know, when I'm a kid, a lot of the things I heard, I was in a conservative church. It wasn't bad by any means, for those people who might attribute conservative to bad. It was conservative in its practices, but an overall good church in many ways. But still, I heard a lot of, you know, anti other churches rhetoric.
Yeah.
In essence, this whole, like, because kind of what I described, we ascribe to the whole Bible, the Sabbath, state of the dead, food, dietary stuff, all sorts of things that would kind of lead you to this place of, well, we are doing more, we are better off, we are, you know, what, however you might think about being intellectually superior, the arrogance that comes from that. But I think it's been sad to see that still present in many areas of Adventism.
Yeah.
We've seen it even at the top of the chain when it comes to like things like women's ordination and stuff like that. There's this impression that I get from those who are anti-women's ordination that tends to be kind of this, not all, again, because I think if anything, that in these last years we've seen that you can't just monolithically paint one side with a brush. So I want to be careful, but
for sure.
Many who tend to support women's to be against women's ordination, there's kind of this intellectual arrogance that comes with that, which is like, no, I'm following the Bible, and the Bible explicitly says this,
right?
You know, and then on the other side, it feels like there's generally a more pleading feeling. Not that there, and I'm going to be honest, there's definitely the intellectual arrogance in some on the support women's ordination side of things, but it feels more like a pleading of like, just like, would you see a different perspective? Could you open up your heart and mind to see a different way? And maybe that's just me, you know, not having full pictures, but that's the impression that I feel from that argument specifically. And so it's sad because we still see that. And I think it has rubbed off, especially on us as young adults, in some pretty damaging ways. Because when you grow up your whole life kind of with this intellectual arrogance, and then the minute that you get exposed to an idea that's different than what you've heard, that you always heard was scary or illogical or a weakly supported argument, you know, and then you get presented with a more holistic version of that argument, you go, oh shoot.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
Exactly.
You know, and, And then it throws you off. And what we tend to do, especially, you know, in that young adult period of time in your life, you're just questioning. You're questioning what you learned. You're questioning what you grew up with. And you're trying to compare that to new information and new experiences. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that the intellectual arrogance that I've seen and felt from those in my childhood, other young adults in Adventism have felt that. And as a result, when they are faced with other things that are fairly good arguments against some of the ways we act, mm-hmm. against some of it's theology, but a lot of it's just practice against
lifestyle issues
and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Lifestyle issues are how intense we are about certain things, or Ellen White, or all these different things. Mm-hmm. Then it's just so much easier to just be like, oh my goodness. And throw everything out about Adventism. Throw it all out, because it's like, yikes, we were so sure we were so right.
Yeah.
And then here I am, you know, experiencing something that feels like it's right too. And that, so that dichotomy of like, oh man, I was right. Now I'm faced with new information and I don't know what to do with this. I think it seems to be partly a product of us not being intellectually humble enough to consider other viewpoints around us and actually have to have good answers and actually have to like walk through the process of engaging with other ideas. I don't know. Maybe this is all a very theoretical up in the air thing, but no, I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I think it is connected to just real people, because I mean, the first thing I was thinking as you were talking was, I remember being like, what, 11, 12 years old, hanging out with friends. And already at that age, I remember the arrogance that I felt within myself that like we were Adventists and we like kept the Sabbath and that made us better than other Christians. And when I think back to that arrogance, like I was 11, like I didn't stumble upon that. Like that was handed to me. That was taught to me. And again, I'm not blaming any, you know, specific people or my parents or whatever. I think it was a culmination of, all, you know, all.
I'm blaming them all.
I'm blaming all. They're all to blame. No, that kind of thing when you're that young, I think is taught and I think is handed. And the fact that I felt that way at such a young age. And I think that's really important that we're handed that sort of feeling, that sort of arrogance that young, and that it sort of, I think it becomes kind of a part of us throughout life as we get older. And not all of us, I think, even recognize how we come from that sort of pot. Like, I think it's so part of the water that we swim in that we don't even know. We don't even.
Yeah. Yeah. As literally as soon as you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, that was the same way at that age.
Yeah.
And that's an important recognition because, yeah, I think as you were saying, we didn't just an 11-year-old doesn't just think that way.
Yeah.
It you pick that up from somewhere.
It's not like I was reading theological textbooks and like, you know, commentaries and like, oh, discover like I have the ultimate truth that's better than everyone else. I didn't care about that stuff. I just wanted to listen to
you,
Reliant K.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at 11, really?
That's a little young.
I don't think I cared about music at 11.
Same.
I think you're right that like you don't pick that up, you know, from nowhere. It's not like you just pick that up randomly. You're picking that up because there's an intentional, not intentional,
maybe unintentional. Right.
There's a thing in the water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just this. It's the water you're in, and so you're just adapting to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember I'd kind of always be on my guard around non-Adventist kids, you know, because like, for instance, dietary stuff, you know, it's like, well, I eat pork or it's like, my mom made bacon. Do you want some? Be like, no, I don't want that.
Bacon's
you know?
A sin.
Exactly. You're just like, this is a bad thing. And what's so interesting is when you learn that as a kid, that gets ingrained in you, whether you like it or not, like the feeling around, you know, bacon bad, all of a sudden it starts to rub off on how you then look at people and their choices. And I mean, it's quite interesting. And so
I feel like I feel like it's the combination of like bacon bad and I'm better than you because I don't eat it.
Yes.
I feel like it's
that's the arrogance.
Yeah. The marrying of those.
Cause it's one thing to know, like, hitting somebody is bad, mm-hmm. but then there's the other like side of things where it's like, and I'm better than you cause I didn't hit you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the weird thing because we may all agree that hitting somebody is wrong, mm-hmm. but then when you have the attitude of I'm better than you cause I didn't hit you, everyone's like, yeah, but you're kind of a
jerk.
insert words I can't say on the podcast here. like that's what it kind of is. It's your attitude about your belief in mm-hmm. your arrogance about it is almost as bad as if you had done the thing that was wrong. Ooh. Is what it feels like.
Yeah, that's really.
And so that's kind of the weird thing where it's like, as yeah. Adventists, especially in the theological front, it's easier for us as pastors because we have more theological based conversations a lot.
Yeah.
Like about pieces of theology that might be obscure to some people that a lot of people don't care about. But on that front, at least, it is very clear that there is a lot of intellectual arrogance and superiority in that space. But then what's so interesting is for those who maybe aren't quite as versed in the theology of a thing, mm-hmm. there's still that thing that we picked up as kids, which was we're better because of what we believe.
Yeah.
Which is not surprisingly, is just absolutely not biblical.
Yeah.
But it does. It's kind of interesting because Adventist leaders, I don't remember. I think it was the president, Ted Wilson.
It was Ted.
Talked about how Adventist organizations ought not to invite non-Adventist speakers.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
To Adventist things, mm-hmm. even to the point of why do we need to read non-Adventist books?
Yeah, about books.
Because
yeah.
in essence, if we are the correct, you know, if we're the right denomination, if we have the truth, then we don't need to read from other people because, and this is not like, this isn't a mischaracterization. These are
yeah, he definitely
indirect
said that.
Quotes in essence, indirect quotes from Adventist leadership. And that is such a, I was reading an article about intellectual arrogance, actually, as mm-hmm. we were talking about it. And it's by this lady named Alessandra Tencini. I'm saying that so wrong. I know I am. Anyways, but she was talking about intellectual arrogance, and she brought up this great point, talking about how intellectual arrogance produces ignorance in you, the arrogant person.
Yeah.
Because you silence everything else around you. Mm. And as it's, you either prevent other people to speak. So like, think about a conversation where, you know, you're there's competing ideas being thrown out there, mm-hmm. and you have the one guy who's just like, no, what I believe is true. And then in essence, you just don't listen. So you silence the other voices, mm-hmm. or you're listening to their arguments, but then you're like mischaracterize them. Mm. It's like, oh, so you're saying that everyone wants to kill all the babies. And you're just like, right. No, that's not what I said at all. But in essence, you're mischaracterizing it. So you don't actually have to, engage with the argument itself.
Yeah.
But, and you can still remain right.
It's easier.
And and that kind of fosters the self-delusion that you're correct, that you are right. And then it keeps you ignorant about the world, about other people, about nuance in beliefs and all that stuff. And that's what it has felt like with an Adventism to some degree, mm-hmm. where you're saying, oh, don't have Adventist speakers, don't have non-Adventist books, all that. It's like, but so what you're saying is that all Christian truth is all truth about Jesus, in essence, mm-hmm. is restricted to about, I don't know, 26, what are we at, 24 million, 27 million?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
People, and it can only come from those people. And that is quite the statement. And it leads yeah. to it, like, even if maybe many in our circles would just totally reject that, that's just our circles. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's a lot of us are just like, that's not smart. But there are a lot of people who look to leadership from someone like Ted Wilson
for sure.
and agree with it.
Especially in the world church. Yeah.
Yeah. But even like in the more conservative circuits, I will get to eviscerating the left. Don't you worry. But
it's coming.
But on the more conservative side, where it's just like, it becomes an echo chamber of where we have this intellectual arrogance that we have the truth, but we're not listening to other people. We're mischaracterizing their arguments and and just in essence saying, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Really.
100%. And literally what you're saying is, we don't need to get in the weeds of this, but this, as you were talking, I was like, that's exactly what's happening in politics. And it's literally what happens on every news channel when there's ever an interview, I feel like. And we talked about that. Like, it just, you're watching and you're just like, you're not actually interested in the other person's view. You want to either embarrass them, show the viewers that they're wrong, or show them how much smarter you are, or so much, you know, there's not. And I do feel like it is that similar. There's always similarities between politics and church. And I feel like this is definitely one of them. And it's so much easier to like keep someone's view at a distance, because I feel like it's scary almost to like open yourself up to the possibility that maybe there's something you haven't considered, or maybe,
yeah,
there's a piece of the puzzle that someone else maybe has to give or share that you didn't know about, or you couldn't see from your perspective, you know? And I feel like,
isn't it true that when you have discussions or have to engage with stuff that's new or disagrees with you, mm-hmm. that in essence, the amygdala, like that center of your brain, that is kind of, it's the first thing that gets the signals in mm-hmm. essence, and everything goes through that. It's your fight or flight response. In essence, it's a fear center is what people say. Mm-hmm. That when you're in that conversation, or you are being presented with information that disagrees with you, that it's like you're being attacked.
Yeah.
In essence. That's what it feels like in your brain, that you are under attack. And
when someone's like, I disagree.
And so then
with
therefore
you.
Exactly. And so the incredible quickness of the defensive reaction that rises in you mm-hmm. it's surprising to me. I mean, like if you think about this in the context of marriage or any relationship, you know, and you're told that you've done something wrong, mm-hmm. you get at least I tend to have tended to in my life, get so defensive so quick. Because it feels like I'm under attack, mm-hmm. and so it's not surprising then that we tend to intellectual arrogance, because it's an easier way to deal with other information. In fact, it's an easier way to deal with it because you don't have to deal with it.
Right.
You can just say, "Well, what I already believe is technically better, and so therefore, you know, I don't have to listen."
Yeah, it's way less work, and I think what a tragedy. I'm thinking back to something you said earlier a couple minutes ago about the hitting scenario, that like, even though you didn't hit them, you didn't do anything damaging physically, like your posture, or you didn't do the thing, but your posture towards them and everyone else is maybe almost just as damaging. And I feel like that's the tragedy of, I think, what at our worst, what we can be, what the church can, what Adventism can be, I think, and what we have slid into at times. And again, I'm hesitant to paint a broad brush across everyone in the whole world, every Adventist ever, but in moments and spaces when we are like the one you described with, you know, the president saying, you know, we shouldn't even read non-Adventist books. That's really wild. Cause it's like, wow, we're already, I feel like the damage that we're doing by not even being open to listen to others. And I'm not saying, and I think we're gonna transition to this part of the conversation too. Like, I'm not saying throw out all truth, throw out all standards, throw out everything that you believe to be true that is a gift to others. But I think it's so much of it. Like, classic quote. What is it? Who is the guy who quoted the who said the people don't care how much you know unless they know how much you care?
No, I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
I think it's John Maxwell. I'm pretty sure it's John Maxwell.
That sounds right.
And I think that's almost it. And I think the longer I've been alive and the longer I've pastored people and know people and had conversations with people outside of my faith group, the more I'm just like, oh man, I have so much to learn. And like, I would rather risk being a learner and a listener than someone who thinks I have all the answers to give everyone, you know?
Well, it's interesting. A few of the things I was reading in this article, it was a kind of like a scholarly article about intellectual arrogance. And for instance, arrogance is often simply like just disdain for other people. Mm. It's so interesting that you utilize correct, or in your mind, correct belief systems and what it allows you to do in the way that you utilize it is to mask the fact that you just don't like other people, or that because you are separate from them, you get to not like them.
That's so good.
And that's much easier than having to engage with the messiness of loving them, even though they're different. And so, and then another thing too, just feeling superior is a drug to humans.
For sure.
I mean, it's a drug to me, you know, and has been in my life, because I tend to be someone who cares a lot about having correct beliefs. Like I spend a lot of time thinking about what I believe and processing against other things and thinking about it in my own head, and then coming out with like, okay, I've processed this. Here I go. I finally figured it out. So that's tends to be how I think. And so it's very easy for me to feel intellectually superior to other people. And man, does it feel good, because, you know, you hear this other person who hasn't thought about it as much as you, and here they come with this weak, lame argument, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, well, what about this? And I'm just like, well, I've thought about that. Bam. You know, then hit him with an intellectual fist.
Exactly.
And man, it feels good. It feels good to walk out of that space.
It feels good to crush people. You got one over. Intellectually.
Yeah, because in essence, like, a lot of us don't get the opportunity. I say get the opportunity, but a lot of us don't get the opportunity to physically dominate someone, right? That is a powerful feeling, because you physically manhandle this person, but it is far easier to do it using words, emotions, sentiments. Mm. It's far easier to hurt somebody using that.
Yeah.
And so that a feeling of superiority that is filling spaces in our lives that are empty it's a powerful drug. And the reason I bring it up is because it's scary then to realize that many of us are utilizing what may even be more correct belief systems than other people as in the most unhealthy ways. We are utilizing them to feed some of the worst habits and mindsets and in dark places in our lives. Isn't that harsh? Like, that hurts.
Yeah. No,
me,
yeah.
At least
100%. That 100% hurts. And I think that it's a real, I feel like that's really sad. And that kind of grieves my heart, because I'm thinking back to when we did the Ellen White episode, and I'm remembering how we talked about how, you know, like, Ellen White didn't view herself. Ellen White had a very different view of herself than the way that I think a lot of our church has projected onto her. And we were talking about how, you know, she felt she didn't hold herself in as high of a regard and place herself in an arrogant position. And I remember, I think Sean and I were kind of going back and forth a little bit. And I was saying, you know, isn't the way that she's been used, doesn't that matter even more than the way that even she viewed herself, or the way that the church officially views her in the documents? Like, isn't the way that people on the ground use her, you know, in toxic ways, whatever, doesn't that matter more? Isn't that more relevant than the intellectual theory of it? Because that's what people feel, and what people feel in the real world, you know? And I feel like this is a similar sort of thing. It's like, even if we have some views that maybe lead to more flourishing or more health for people, or lead to more joy, like, if the way you're presenting them is from such a place of arrogance that nobody even likes you, that you're not even like you, then it doesn't even matter. Then it's just irrelevant, you know?
Exactly.
In fact, it's worse. You end up doing more damage to people, because your posture towards them is one of like, okay, you're saying things that you think are true, but you're not even nice. So there's.
Yeah. And what's weird is that if you really are trying to get across a truth you really believe in, then the worst way to do it is to be just a complete, in essence, a-hole about it and act as if, oh, well, I have the truth. And therefore, because then you're turning them off to what could be a very helpful and good thing for them to adopt as a belief system. But you're a jerk.
Yeah, you're
so
a jerk.
So they want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you don't get to the point of having a real conversation, because the other person just feels like you're not even nice.
Yeah, and I would go out on a limb to say I think that's what has caused a lot of Adventist young people to just either actually leave the church, or just kind of live in this weird limbo where you haven't left Adventism, but you're not engaged at all.
Yeah.
Because in essence, when you watch people interact with life in such an unhealthy way, but then have this arrogance about how correct they are about what they believe.
Yeah.
And it comes across, and then you're just like, okay, like that's not that's not healthy. It's not good. It's not, this is not the fruits of the spirit. This is something else. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting. So a few other things just to point out. So intellectual arrogance, it's an overestimation in your own abilities. Mm. Like, you know, you have come to this belief system and therefore you are, you know, almost by yourself, correct? Mm-hmm. But arrogance, intellectual arrogance is actually weirdly, it's unaccountable. It's not accountable to anything. Hmm. So you have figured out the truth and you're not letting any other information in to challenge it.
Right.
Therefore, you're not accountable. You're almost this monolith off on your own, just like, I am the arbitrator of everything that's true. No one else gets to have the response to you as a person. Mm. And it's interesting that a huge result of intellectual arrogance is the silencing of anything that disagrees with that.
Ooh.
So, for instance, it's kind of what we're talking about. Don't listen to Adventist authors or non-Adventist authors or non-Adventist books. Mm-hmm. But what's so interesting about it is I think it's because there's this perceived danger that if you were to read something that wasn't Adventist, read something outside of the faith, that you would then get, you know, led astray.
Right.
And of course, there have people believe some pretty nonsensical things. So
some crazy people out there.
That is always a danger. You know, it's like you're going to read that Ellen White was the Lizard King, and then you're just going to believe that. There's at least 10 people out there in the world that would believe that. That's the scary part.
For sure.
So,
if the amount of conspiracy theories and people who believe them in recent years have taught me anything, it's that people will believe all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So there is that. Of course, there's that danger. But I think it's an overblown danger that someone's just going to read something that's totally out of any sort of logical or scriptural or emotional truth. They're just going to go off chasing this random thing. I think that there is more of a perceived fear that you're going to read that, you know, Sunday is actually the right day to worship, and then you're going to get dragged into that.
Yeah.
You know, type of thing. And what's so interesting is like, okay, so then what are we afraid of? Are we afraid of that our beliefs don't have the legs to stand on?
Right.
Because if that's true, then I have more questions about why you want to silence the outside mm-hmm. than about the actual belief, like, and about the beliefs themselves than I do about other people's beliefs. Because I get to question those. Why can't I question these? And so it's weird when you create a culture that doesn't allow, or Adventism isn't a culture that doesn't allow other things in, that strongly discourages and uses the idea of intellectual superiority to keep other things out, in a sense, to silence the outside, because I don't, that's scary to listen to. That's a scary thing for us to walk in.
Yeah.
In essence, because I mean, we're not accountable to anybody. We're not listening to anyone else. We're not, you know, letting ourselves be challenged. And then it feels like you either kind of end up in this weird middle ground where you're not really connected to Adventism, or you leave it because it's just, wow, this is not true. The new information I've been presented with versus the intellectual dishonesty that I've seen on in Adventism, I'm just out. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side that's just like totally buys, you know, the way things have always been. You know, right. Obviously there's a lot of people in between, but those are maybe some of the major camps. I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like the Dark Ages sort of effect, when the church kind of had a monopoly on the Bible, right? And it wasn't translated into the common language, so normal people couldn't even read it to check. And there was almost like this fear, like, if normal people knew what the Bible says, then we would lose power and authority. And, you know, of course we know now from history, like the Catholic Church was distorting scriptures, you know, for essentially for their own gain and power. You know, when we think of indulgences and stuff like that, which is a lot of like what the Reformation was about, and Martin Luther kind of, you know, exposing, especially indulgences in particular. It was sort of like, oh, like when I actually read the Bible for myself, I realize it leads me in a different direction. And I feel like I totally agree. I think the church becomes far more suspicious, and, you know, millennials and younger people, young adults, and, you know, we're already suspicious of institutions. And I feel like the church becomes even more suspicious when it's like, don't read any literature outside of our camp, because if you do, like, you might be, they don't even say the second part. Like, if you do, you might be swayed. When in reality, I think, you know, and we both know this from doing higher education, when you go to college and you do higher education, like, you're reading opposite viewpoints in order to Because if you have a viewpoint that's robust and strong and intellectually sound, it will stand up to criticism. So I feel like there definitely is a, I definitely have friends who I think feel that there's such a stranglehold on, you know, and I felt that too. Like there's such a stranglehold on ideas that, man, like, why are we afraid, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, speaking of indulgences, I think, we need to get a sponsor clip in here. So yeah. Let me just record this real quick. Just a word from our sponsors. Have you ever said a bad word? Have you ever thrown a rock at your brother and hit him in the face? Well, just send us $100 and we will be happy to send you the forgiveness package. It's a piece of paper that says you're forgiven. Please send it now. That I feel like there's the amount of people that actually let indulgences happen, you know, in the Catholic Church, like just to bring this up, is indicative of how we.
I just want
to
point out that you said that ad and then you just carried on as if nothing happened.
That was a word from our sponsors.
You're right.
The Catholic Church.
You're right.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if we were sponsored by the Catholic Church?
Yeah, that'd be wild. That'd be nuts. The actual Catholic Church and the Pope chose to sponsor our podcast.
Chose us. They're not moderating our content though. Thank you.
Right. Exactly. We have free control.
We just owe them a debt.
Exactly.
No, the reason I bring it up is because the amount of people that gathered around that idea and let it happen. There's a lot of factors to it, but a piece of that is this intellectual arrogance of this is the truth. Even if I have some misgivings about it, mm-hmm. I can't consider the other side and exit the groupthink of this mm-hmm. is fine. In essence, I must continue on with this because to engage with the other side of this issue would be almost in its own self heresy. Mm. And what's so interesting about that is I think that's partly intellectual arrogance causes is it causes us to kind of defend our beliefs at any cost and to add anything that could potentially be from the opposing side, even if it's good and doesn't actually disagree with anything.
Yeah.
But to bring something in from the outside is dangerous because it's undermining our insular truth that we already have. Mm-hmm. So for instance, there's a huge thing that happened a while ago, at least in our sphere, was we went to Walla Walla University and there was this whole thing about spiritual formation.
Right.
Spiritual formation. And in essence, this was nuts. In essence, there were people who had, you know, heard this word spiritual formation. There's a bunch of buzzwords, spiritual formation, mm-hmm. emerging church, all of this different stuff. And no one had a clear definition of what these things were.
Nobody could define it.
They were just being thrown out there. No. And so, in essence, the basic things that were going around was that there were these like Eastern mystic meditation practices being taught on Walla Walla University campus that mm-hmm. Alex Bryan was like this Jesuit Catholic, you know, in disguise. He was the lead pastor of the university church, mm-hmm. That somewhere on the campus of Walla Walla University, some dark room, there was in essence, these like, Eastern mystic, contemplative spiritual practices going on somewhere in a basement, who knows where. Somewhere on the campus of Walla Walla University. And what was hilarious, so we're part of the theology department, we know the campus ministries people who are also included in this, and then Alex Bryan, we know all these people are just like, this is utter nonsense, none of this is happening, what, this is all just paranoia and fear. But what's so interesting about it is there was like a guy who wrote a book about all of this mm-hmm. and came to what was called the State Line Church. So Walla mm-hmm. University is right near the Oregon-Washington border. And so there's a church just on the other side of the border in Oregon called the State Line Church. So the guy that wrote the book about all this comes and he's speaking at State Line Church.
Is this the Omega Deception thing?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Let's use Omega and Deception and then bam. Everything is falling.
It looks good on a flyer.
Be afraid. Yeah. And so like there were like theology professors and I think like the executive pastor of Walla Walla University, they all went to this thing and spoke up, you know, in against you know, the viewpoints that were being stated. Mm-hmm. And the dude had the audacity to say, oh, I don't fact check the things that are told to me. It's not my job to fact check them. I'm told these things and I get them out.
Yikes.
You know, I need to get the information out. And I'm like, at what level do you have this superiority complex that you then believe that information that's given to you could never be false?
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't be wrong. And then therefore it's a danger, and I'm the savior of this, and I'm the one who's pulling out all of the deception, all that stuff. And then you just start spewing this information in the world without any sort of the whole reason I bring this up is because, again, it's this thing within us, and it's not just Adventists. This is a human problem, but it is surprising to me that we struggle with it so badly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so blatantly self-absorbed.
Yeah,
I mean, like, intellectual arrogance is protecting your self-esteem to a large degree, because you can't handle being potentially wrong. And I guess the question that does come to my mind as a result of all of this is like, okay, so we see this present all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But the question comes to my mind, like, there's got to be some sort of mix between like this unhealthy stuff we're seeing, like intellectual arrogance,
mm-hmm.
versus like there's actual truth that matters in the world.
Hmm.
Like obviously, like with this guy who's just spewing, you know, absolutely
like hearsay,
not fact checked, just random hearsay. Yeah, there's got to be a truth that we come to that's like, well, no, this is true.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have that, then we kind of end up with everyone has their own truth. That's a weird spot to be in, because then what is true at all? Mm-hmm. You know, what is truth? But there's got to be something there. And I think how do you not fall into the trap of that intellectual arrogance, but still maintaining some level of, I know things are true. Mm-hmm. I know things that are true matter. You know, like how do we do that?
Yeah, and maybe as we start wrapping up here, getting practical. Yeah, I agree. I think that's, yeah, I think that question's definitely at the core of the whole thing. And I think back to a conversation I had with a friend, non-Adventist, non-Christian friend. And I remember we were talking about something, and you know, I had said, you know, I think human beings are created in this specific way. You know, I think the scriptures sort of lead me to say, like, human beings are created in this specific way. And she kind of came back with, you know, well, have you ever talked to someone who feels like they weren't created in that way? Have you ever talked to someone who feels like they don't identify with that? They don't resonate with that. And it was such an interesting statement, because it was kind of humbling for me. You know, I was telling Jesse, I was telling you before this, we recorded this, like, I feel like I consider myself a pretty open-minded, open-hearted listener, progressive, whatever, thinker. But even I felt that, like, I didn't even realize how intellectually superior that I was in the conversation until she said that. And, you know, she was mentioning some of her friends in, you know, the LGBTQ plus community, and was saying, you know, she's like, you know, the fact that, you know, you are connected to church, that you believe, you know, Christianity, that word Christianity is attached to you. Like, I have some friends who just have a hard boundary and would just say, I don't even want to know that person. And if she, you know, and this is a friend of mine, so, you know, she's like, I knew if they met you, they would like you, but if they knew that you were connected to the church, they would immediately just, because there's been so much pain, there's been so much of
because this, of that intellectual superiority, that's, yeah, like, in a sense that we know that sexuality is this way specifically, and therefore, exactly, you're outside of that, you're a sinner. And then to a certain degree in many communities, that means that we don't have to engage with you, we don't have to love you, we don't have to even try and mess with the messiness of your circumstance. We just get to be totally out because we know the truth.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I don't think we're going to get into the weeds of sexuality today right now, but yeah, exactly.
I'm ready. Let's have a 3-more-hour pod. Like, let's just extend this for 3 hours.
Let's dig in. Actually, the funny thing is, we really could, but
I don't think anybody else would be interested in it, but we could.
We could, for sure. I think, yeah. So yeah, with that topic in particular, it's like, There's been so much pain. There's been so much of this intellectual superiority where, you know, they've interacted with people connected to the church who are like my perspective is clearly better and superior than yours and clearly more true. And there's not even any listening. There's not even any valuing. There's not even any, coming alongside and, hey, can you tell me your story? And I was thinking about that, and that just made me, it was so humbling for me, even though, like I thought that I was so open to that already. And I was just thinking, man, that is so challenging. Like, that's such a challenge for us in the world, that there's people already who would write us off because they've already had interactions that are so intellectually superior. On the other side, I think there's such a gift in the fact that we, especially in today's day and age where truth seems to be, there seems to be a war on truth and if truth is even real, you know, whether that's politically, intellectually.
Yeah, to eviscerate the left, as I promised I would do, the left on in Adventism, in politics, in general,
Western culture
tends to get to this. Yeah. It tends to get to this place where it's like, this intellectual superiority because you don't believe the regressive things that the right believes.
Right.
And so then you get to this place where it's like, okay, cool. Like, you're advocating for loving people better or advocating for these specific things that might reduce poverty, but you are the biggest, just know-it-all jerk I have seen in my entire life.
Like, you're intellectually superior. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like you are acting as if you are the gift to mankind because of the things that you believe. But right. We haven't even actually had research about what you're talking about. We haven't actually seen this played out over time. You just believe that you are automatically right because you're not regressive like the conservatives. And so, like, I'm saying this because both sides of it bother me. And that's what you see it in Adventism. You see it in liberal Adventists who are just like, I don't even believe that Jesus was raised from the dead. And you're just like, okay.
I don't know that you're a Christian.
Why? So where are you actually grounded? and I'm not trying to make fun of it. It's just like when they're coming at it from an intellectually superior attitude and you're just like, but whoa, dude, you're just saying this stuff as if this is true, but we haven't actually had a conversation about this. The way that you're coming out about this is just as if, well, I believe this thing and I've moved past the other things.
Right. You know?
And it's like, that's intellectual superiority in its own way. So you see it on both sides and it's awful. So I just bring that up as kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah. 100%.
Either direction.
It's on both sides for sure. And I think in the same way that, like, extremism, maybe you could say political extremism is on the, you know, on both sides, in some ways.
But you were talking about how, like, the left, there's this, whoa, I haven't talked to certain people, at least, who just have a different experience than what I might call the truth that I've experienced.
Exactly. You know? And I think that's – it's so crucial. I feel like it's absolutely crucial that we have conversations with people who don't believe like us, who believe, in fact, opposite, opposing views in us, and not from a position of trying to convince them they're wrong or defending ourselves, but just in a listening – because there's a way – there's a way to listen I can listen to someone with an opposite perspective and I can walk away not like being compromised in my belief, but I can still value the other person's experience, you know? And I think back to when I wanted to read Harry Potter really bad as a kid and I asked my dad, like, well, you can read the first book. I'll allow you to read the first book in order to defend against it. And I'm like, well, that sucks all the fun out of it because I want to read it for the story, not in order to be able to prove why it's evil and bad. And I feel like that's literally what this is.
Can you tell me right now why Harry Potter is the worst thing ever and why I should let my kid read it?
I can't because I love Harry Potter.
Well, then if that's the case, then you're a sinner. And I believe that witchcraft is prevalent and all over the place in our society. And therefore, you're wrong.
Oh, my word. Right. Harry Potter is so great. The story of the gospel, the boy who lived. Oh, man. But we'll get into that another time.
But then you were also talking about how, like, on the right, on the conservative side of things, there is a deeply needed thing, which is that there is objective truth. In essence, things that are true, that are actually true. Like, it's not just someone's own truth. Mm. It is actually true, objectively.
Yeah, and I think that's really countercultural to say, especially when you live in more progressive circles, and that's kind of more your echo chamber, which is definitely the case for me. It is kind of countercultural to say, like, there's things that are true, and those true things are true, and they lead us to better flourishing and joy. And I think that is such a strength. And I think this is a recent journey for me where I'm actually able to say this and believe this, where, like, I think one of the beauties and gifts of the Adventist perspective is that we come from a lineage of people who felt like there were true things in the world that they could stand up and say, this thing is true, this thing is good, and this thing is evil. And I feel like that's such a strong thing when it comes to issues of health, when it comes to issues of social justice, to be able to stand up in the world and prophetically say, like, this thing is wrong, like, racism is wrong, and I can say that, you know. And because you have the ability to say, this thing is true and this thing is not, this thing is evil and this thing is good, I feel like, it, you know, there's such a power, I feel like, and a beauty that comes from the perspective on maybe the more right side that says there are true things. And I feel like that's sort of the testimony of the scriptures, is like, there's a way that God made the humans in the world, and there's certain things that are good and lead to our flourishing and joy. And I think that we were talking about this earlier before recording, like, trying to figure out how to integrate the two. I think that could be maybe where the health is found, you know, like,
well, cause that's the question is, for instance, there's one thing to be like, I need to listen to others. I need to understand other people's stories, because if I don't, then I'm just in my own echo chamber, believing that what I believe is right. The people around me all believe the same things as I do. Bam. We already have it figured out. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get cults from. At the extreme level, I'm not saying that we are, but like at extreme level, it's just this echo chamber of we're the only ones with the truth. But then you have the other side of things. Cause like there's the listening to everybody's story and hearing things that other people have experienced as true that are not like you. So there's that side. And then there's the other side of things, which is like, but everything isn't just everyone's own objective truth. There must be things that are actually true. Like, mm-hmm. is gravity everyone's subjective recognition of it? It's like, right. No, just because you don't believe in gravity doesn't mean that you float in the air.
I feel like I don't know enough science to be able to refute that, but I wonder if some scientists would say that gravity is...
what you're asking right now is if I did... what you're asking right now or thinking or positing is, yep. I wonder if someone would support my view that if I just didn't believe in gravity, exactly. I would float into the air.
Like, maybe if you didn't believe in it, like, is it even real? Are we in a simulation, really? Is that really...
That is the most, like...
I believe Elon
right
Musk.
Fruit for, like, a Pixar movie or something.
Yeah, it is.
But yes, there's got to be things that are true. At the same time, if I get too sure about what I believe is true and I stop listening to other people or hearing perspectives that disagree with me, then I become intellectually arrogant.
Yeah.
And so and then what's weird, too, is in our fear to be intellectually arrogant, we fear to actually say the things that we believe are true.
Yeah.
And so whereas people who aren't afraid of being intellectually arrogant tend to just say things that are true as if they are the only thing that is true. And so it's like I'm saying all of this, verbally processing my way into how in the world do we come to a place where it's like I am trying my best to stand for truth, but not being intellectually arrogant about it.
Yeah, I feel like that's really the struggle and the journey. And I feel like maybe we always say this. We always say this in every episode.
The answer is in the gray area. Well, yeah, we just need to pre-record something, yep. that we then just play at every single point we get to this point, where it's just like
the same clip.
The answer is in the gray area. It's a balance. It's both sides.
Conversation. we should create merch. We'll create a t-shirt that says that. But I do think I'm not going to say the gray. I'm going to say I think a lot of it comes from conversation, and. Let me speak more holistically. Maybe it depends on which area of the world and church you grow up in, like which area has been handed to you. Because I think I remember being, you know, down in Southern California and having conversations, you know, say with like youth group kids about certain things that I struggle with, like baggage, like legalistic baggage that I had been given growing up.
Yeah.
And they didn't even relate with it at all. They're just like, what? Like that they didn't resonate because that isn't how they grew up. They didn't grow up with any of the same baggage that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe if
those
you're
bacon eaters,
exactly. If you're coming from a space of, if you're coming from a place where you sort of, the default perspective is more like left leaning, like a lot of truth is relative, you know, and you know, you kind of fall more on the left side of things. I feel like maybe it benefits you. And I think, you know, I fall on that side. So I think maybe it benefits us to ponder and consider and to, to ponder and consider the age old truths that Christians have believed for centuries and consider why am I so afraid to stand for a thing that is true? And I think you're right. I think the fear is that we're going to alienate people. We're going to hurt people because it has so often been used for those, you know, in those ways. But maybe on the right side of things, it's like a intentional having conversations with people. Because I remember one conversation with
expanding your worldview, in essence.
Yeah, expanding your worldview, having conversations with people you who disagree with you or have lived a different life. Or, you know, I remember one conversation I had with an older, more conservative gentleman in the past couple months. And, you know, we were talking about the same issue of LGBTQ plus, you know, friends. And they, you know, he made a really wild black and white statement. He's like, you know, all people in that camp, they're only that way because of something that happened to them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's really wild. You know, have you ever, and I thought, you know, I think back to my friend who said, have you ever talked to someone who that wasn't their experience? Have you ever talked to someone, do you have any friends even that something didn't happen to them? And they have a different perspective, you know, that, you know, and so, yeah, I think there's such, and, you know, I tend to fall again more on the side of, man, like if I were to be known for either one, I think I'd rather almost be known for having conversations and valuing people. But I think I'm starting to see the value of being able to stand up and say, no, this thing is true. And so I don't know. I think maybe there's different challenges for both sides. Maybe different sides have different, you know, challenges to walk.
I think it's important to recognize that, like, if there's it ought to be a habit of ours to be engaging with people we don't normally engage with. I mean, and that's far easier these days because you can go listen to stories online. If you know, maybe you don't have somebody who has a completely different worldview from you in your space, in your bubble, but you can go online and listen to different stories and hear other people's experiences. And so you can widen your worldview that way and listen to things that might disagree and clash with what you already believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important, I think. But I think, weirdly enough, that many of the people that we're talking to in this time, or at least that are listening to us talk to various degrees of lucidity here, that I think was probably far more prevalent is less of a widening of your worldview and more of a, my worldview is already pretty vast.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you grew up in the internet age. So what do I do? How do I believe something that's true when I hear all of these other things that could be equally valid? You know, it's the whole like, well, you know, do all religions kind of lead to the same, or do most religions kind of lead to the same place? You know,
they,
how can I say that mine is more valid than yours? And things like that. And that's a really important conversation. We probably don't have, we just don't have time to get into right now. But what I will say is that I think there is an increasing importance for us to stand up for what is true, but in a way that's not arrogant or harsh or trying to present ourselves as morally superior to anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for instance, let's say that you truly believe sexuality is more black and white than a liberal view. You know, sexuality, man, woman, and that's where you're at. Then the problem is that that's not the majority view outside of Christianity,
right?
It is a far less accepted thing, and so if you're coming out with like, in essence, with an attitude of of this is true. I'm sorry if you don't like it. It's just true.
Right.
And it's like, it's the whole Ben Shapiro, facts don't care about your feelings.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
And you're like, yeah. And it's like,
facts don't care about your feelings.
that's what he sounds like. And it's, that starts to bother me because I'm like, yeah, but the thing is that a lot of people in that kind of position tend to say that and then let their feelings totally govern what facts they'll even listen to.
Very true.
So there's that. But my whole point is that if you truly believe that, then there is some level of, if you feel that you must stand up for that, then it's the spirit in which it's done that matters so much, to a certain degree, so much more than the thing that's even being said. Because, you know, if you're saying like, hey, listen, like I this is what I believe coming from these places specifically, and I love you. And this is hard for me to say, but it doesn't affect how I interact with you. This is just the thing that I believe. There's that, and versus, yeah, sorry, you're a sinner. And I mean, like, no, not very many people are doing that specifically, but
yeah.
Usually we look quite down on those people. But if you hear what I'm saying, it's the difference in attitude, and I think that matters. I think that then it's one of those things like, God, teach me to love people well. And that when I need to stand up for truth, that you will give me words to say. They're not arrogant. They're not haughty. They're not from a place of needing to defend my viewpoint, yeah. But they're out of genuine love for someone else. Yeah. And I think that's really the only thing we can do, because if not, we risk leaving out potentially life-giving good things in the world. For instance, believing in Sabbath rest. It's like, I don't want to push that on somebody else. It's like, can you think of a more countercultural thing that brings you to a submission and surrender to God that really actually pulls you out of selfishness and trying to work your way to a better life,
yeah.
And just puts you in this place of trust? Can you think of a something better? It's hard to think of something that's better than that. And the experience of truly resting and disconnecting from that rat race of having to make your own life and make your own way in the world.
Build my own
kingdom.
I mean,
that's such a life-giving thing. Yeah. I don't want somebody to miss out on that because I'm afraid of talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, but it does matter the way I talk about it. And so if I'm coming at it from a legalistic or I'm better than you, or we're better than all the other churches kind of way, we're just going to create somebody. If they do believe what we're saying, we're just going to create somebody in our own image. And they're going to be horrible,
yeah.
A horrible Christian on the other side of that. They're going to be a prideful, you know, I'm better than everybody Christian on the other side of that. But if you come at it from, I think, a place of humility, I don't know it all, but I can just tell you from my experience, this is something that I have come to recognize is very true.
Yeah. You
know, I just think, I don't know.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is like, we just have to learn to love people. And
well, if you wanted to massively simplify,
I'm massively simplifying.
No, but radically, yes, I agree with you.
Like, so much more of it is about character, like personal character, than even rightness.
Yeah.
And something that I've heard from a couple friends who grew up Adventists and then have sort of walked away or sort of been on the edge thinking about leaving, et cetera, from two different friends in the past few years are, I feel like I grew up learning how to be a great Adventist, but I don't even know what it means to be a Christian. Well, and like, yeah. I feel alienated from my own Christianity, and I resonate with
that.
What does
it mean to follow Jesus? Cause I know how to do a bunch of things to fit into a culture, but I don't know how to follow Jesus. Well.
Exactly. And I feel like that's literally what it is. And I think that's what Jesus himself did so well. I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before, like he just embodies like spirit and truth, like, so well, yeah. Both at the same time, where like, if you're thinking of like his interaction with the woman at the well, he's like valuing her and he's listening to her, and men didn't speak to women in that time period. So he speaks to her, and he's crossing racial divides because he's speaking to a Samaritan, and he's like lifting her to a place of equality with himself. And then he listens to her and he lets her speak and he lets her tell her story. And then, you know, but he also,
So when he asks for the truth,
yeah,
there is a willingness to listen and hear,
yeah,
because of the way that he created a safe place for her to be different than him.
Exactly.
And then when he finally says, go get your husband, and she's like, I don't have a husband. He's like, yeah, you're right. And then he says the truth.
Right.
But it's not out of like arrogance or haughtiness or like, I'm better than you.
100%. Because he says the truth. He's not afraid to say it. He has no fear of saying, like, this is true. Like, you don't have a husband and this is your situation. Like, you're sleeping with four other guys.
This is your life story.
This is your life story. Like, I know the whole thing, but there's so much of a valuing of that person. I feel like he just embodies the balance so well of, like, valuing people so deeply so that, but also not having a fear of just speaking freely about things that are true. I feel like is just,
I think, to even leave it in a more ambiguous space, I think that my prayer is that we would learn how to stand in that way, like Jesus, that we would learn to stand in that space of valuing and listening and caring for people and loving them so well and not being afraid to say what's true. Not in the like talk show host, facts don't care about your feelings type of way. But rather that, like, to gently and lovingly say what is true about our lives, and that is, I think, a valuable space in the world that we're missing, greatly.
100%.
We as people who follow Jesus are we should embody that. We can embody that. The Spirit can do that in our lives, but we often just fall to the we settle for the morally insufficient and yet just feels so much better way of intellectual arrogance.
100%. I agree, and I think this is the moment.
So in conclusion, Adventism is the only way. If you are not Adventist, I'm so sorry.
I'm so
that
sorry
you have
for
found
you.
The darkness. I'm so sorry that darkness has overcome your life.
Come back into the light.
Come to the light. Hey everyone, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Seeking What They Sought. If you want to join in the conversation, feel free to go to our website or Facebook or Instagram. You can message us, talk with us. We are excited to hear feedback. And we want to hear what you want us to talk about so that we can talk about things that are interesting to you. I also want to thank our producer, Eric Edstrom, who is not on the conversation with us, but is producing this episode. And we just want to acknowledge that he is the 17-time award winner of the Wears Glasses Better Than the Other Randomly Selected Human Award. So thanks, Eric, and we'll see you next time.